from Busan, South Korea. Welcome to the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show.
Coming up this week, what makes a true champion of cycling? Is it really just about numbers, or is there a lot more to it than meets the eye? We'll discuss based on our own observations during our time in the pro peloton.
Plus, the insane valuation of Strava, the end of an era in mountain biking, how Connor and I are getting on as director sportives, and why the UCI are facing a legal challenge to their latest rule changes. This week in the world of cycling, I learned that Girona gravel racing is ridiculously tough. So I competed at the CF Otter event on Saturday, and it was genuinely amongst the top three hardest races I've ever done.
You really suffered, didn't you?
Horrendously so, Connor, yeah. The climbs were awful, and the descents were seriously gnarly. So there was just no respite.
I did tell you about those descents. I'm looking forward to seeing the video, though. We also learned that Dan had an incident with his beard trimmer at the weekend.
You said you were not going to mention that on the show.
I had to. It is so funny.
I guess I'm going to be forced to explain myself now. So at the weekend, I decided to do my monthly eyebrow trim. They can get very long. But instead of having it on setting 5, it turned out it was on setting 0.5. There was a lot more hair that landed in the shower tray than I was expecting.
I did think when I first saw you this morning, you weren't looking quite as expressive. Don't raise your eyebrows at me, Dan.
Eyebrow. I think it probably is.
Yeah, eyebrow. Anyway, finally, we learned that there is a lot more that goes into being a pro cyclist than just numbers.
There is. Thanks for changing the subject, Connor. So this is something actually that we started thinking about when we were discussing the results of the Men's World Individual Time Trial Championships from the weekend, where Remco Evenepoel caught Tadej Pogacar for 2.5 minutes.
Yep, you heard that right. Wow. Evenepoel caught and passed Pogacar, one of the top two cyclists the world has ever seen, having started 2.5 minutes behind him.
Yeah. Now, the reason that was thought-provoking, at least for me, is that it's not in any way changed my prediction of what I think is going to happen in the road race this coming Sunday. So I still think, and I still predict, that Pogacar is going to smash everybody on Sunday, even though he just got smashed in that individual time trial.
Well, he did finish fourth.
Well, but still smashed by Pogacar's own very high standards. I'd say he got crushed, actually. That said, he got even more crushed in the Glasgow World Championships in the time trial a couple of years back. But he just finished third in the road race that year behind Van der Poel and Van Aert. And of course, it didn't really suit him all that well.
And that's one of the reasons why our thoughts on how the road race will pan out on Sunday haven't changed. Pogacar is still favourite, despite yesterday's results. His odds have lengthened slightly, and Evenepoel's have come down, but Pogacar is still a clear favourite.
Exactly. So that led us on to another discussion about what makes a true cycling great and champ, didn't it? Both Connor and I are fortunate enough to have raced with and against some of the best riders in our respective generations, and so we've witnessed what it takes to be the best and what separates them from the rest.
Now, clearly, the biggest factor is talent and genetics. There's no getting around that. Some people are simply more genetically gifted than others. They respond to training stimulus better.
Yeah, and so Connor and I are more genetically gifted, I would say, for cycling than the average human. But in the pro ranks, I think I'm all right in saying this, Connor, we were at the lower end of the natural talent scale.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Like you, I think I realised once I was with the pros, I wasn't going to be a world champion or a prolific winner. No matter how dedicated I was, really, to training, nutrition and everything else that goes into being the best athlete you can be.
Yeah. But then, at the top, there are riders with a very similar level of talent, but very differing levels of results. My theory with cycling, Connor, and in fact a lot of sports, or most sports, is that you're on a sort of pyramid. So, like on one side of the pyramid, you've got people like you and I that are not the most talented out of those pros, but very motivated and very dedicated towards the sport. And then on the other side, on the same level of that pyramid, are riders who are more genetically gifted, but perhaps with slightly less dedication and or motivation.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. And at the top, you have the sports people or riders who have everything. All the talents, but also all the drive to succeed, to train hard. Then on top of that, great bike handling skills, positioning skills, an amazing resistance to fatigue, great tactical nous, and a very strong mentality.
Exactly, yeah. There's so much goes into it, isn't it? The best of the best are as good as they are because they possess every quality that you need to succeed. And there are a lot of ingredients to that, as Conor just mentioned. I'll give you a couple of examples, actually. Yeah. So I'm going to start with David Miller. Now, obviously, one stage in all three Grand Tours, lots of amazing results. I actually mentioned this in my own time trial video just a few weeks back on GCN. But just over a year ago, we went along and filmed David doing a 10-mile individual time trial in the UK. His average power as a 47-year-old who doesn't ride anywhere near as much as he used to was about the same as my best power for that duration when I was a full-time pro in my late 20s.
Yeah, it's a pretty clear difference, isn't
it? It is quite a clear difference, yeah. And then another example, shortly after I retired, I saw a few power numbers from riders that I would love to have had myself as a pro in terms of the numbers they were producing. But those riders weren't getting the results that I would have expected to get had I produced those numbers. Seeing that made it clear to me that there's more to results than just critical power at various durations.
I've definitely seen that as well. I've also known riders who are extremely bright off the bike. I'm not going to name names here for obvious reasons, but they can't seem to make any intelligent decisions during a race.
Yeah, same. I've seen the same.
And vice versa, two riders who are not particularly bright off the bike.
Don't name names there either.
Everything right in a race. And they just seem to know what is the best choice to make in a split. At any time in the race, I'm actually thinking of a few off the top of my head here, but I'm going to keep quiet. But that ability really adds up over the course of long road races where hundreds of even thousands of those decisions have to be made.
You have to make, exactly, yeah. I completely agree. I've seen exactly the same thing. Now, you could say that Tadej Pogacar wins simply because he's better than everybody else physically. And as we said before, that is the largest part of it. But he's also really good at positioning. He doesn't crash very often. And he never seems to get that sick.
Don't you have a stat about how many days of stage racing he's done without ever pulling out?
Yes, I've got a spreadsheet that keeps up to date with this Conor. So right now, he is up to almost 500 days of racing in UCI-ranked stage races. And not once has he withdrawn from one. Not once has he had to abandon because he got really sick or because he crashed so hard that he couldn't continue the race. And that's not by chance.
Changing the subject slightly, I always think Mark Cavendish is a good example of somebody that got results way above what you'd expect for someone with his power numbers.
Yeah, very true. And he actually probably disproves my pyramid theory, doesn't he? Because he was very much, obviously, at the top of the pyramid, even though he wasn't the most genetically gifted rider out there at the time.
No. And actually, I would say there are thousands of riders around the world, not even pros, that can put out better sprint power numbers than Mark Cavendish.
Yep.
At his peak, but they're never going to win a pro race.
That is also very true. Often that's because they simply wouldn't be able to reproduce those power numbers at the end of what could be a 5-hour race. I guess sometimes it's because they couldn't reproduce those power numbers after what is a very intense 5 minutes that lead up to a bunch sprint in the pro peloton. And then for others, they just wouldn't be able to get themselves into a position to sprint for the win in the first place. It's so hard to be in the right place at the right times with about 200 metres to go to the line. In fact, I've often said that when Mark Cavendish won 165 pro races, even being in the position to win 165 sprints is, in my opinion, remarkable, let alone to then go on to win that many.
Yeah, I think unless you've been in a pro sprint, it is so hard to comprehend just how hard it is to be in the mix.
It's crazy, yeah, it's isn't it? And to be in that position so many times and so consistently. On a different front, I also remember Jonathan Vaughters, the manager at EF. He said that Rigoberto Urán's power numbers weren't really that impressive, nowhere near high enough to suggest that he'd be capable of the results that he got in the Grand Tours. He was just a proper bike racer who overperformed from that point of view.
Bring this back around then to Evenepoel and Pogacar. I know Evenepoel is an aero bullet, but at the same time, he must have produced some incredible power on Sunday in the individual time trial. And so you'd think he'd then be the top favourite for the Worlds. He's won it before. He's won the Olympic road race and the Age Best on Liège. All long, tough races.
Exactly, but yet he is not the favourite for Sunday. And that is because of the subtleties of differences in physiology and in everything else that we've mentioned at the top of the show that goes into winning at the very top level. He is the best in the world at time trials right now. There's no doubt about that. And he is very close to being the best in the world on the road as well. But he's just not quite. Pogacar still has a slight edge, even when they're both on top form.
But that's one of the great things about pro cycling, isn't it? There is something for everybody. And there's so many different types of races and parkour. You wouldn't see like an 800-metre runner also competing in the marathon.
No.
But in cycling, with everything from 3 kilometre prologues to 6-hour epics in the mountains, there's something for a whole heap of different riders, different specific talents.
If only we'd had a specific talent within cycling, Colin, eh? What could have been? What could have been? Right, over to you guys watching at home. Perhaps you've seen this sort of thing, maybe in your own line of work that's got nothing to do with athleticism, that some people succeed and get to the very top because of a whole combination of attributes that they possess.
Yeah, let us know in the comment section below.
I always look forward to reading the comments underneath all of our videos, underneath all the GCN shows, but I'm particularly looking forward to reading these ones because it's really interesting drilling into why some people end up being so successful at what they do, isn't it? Anyway, just before we move on, we should say huge congratulations to Evenepoel himself, who took his third successive world time trial title, but also to Switzerland's Marlon Reusser, who took her first. Very well deserved for both of them. Incidentally, a reminder, you can watch a full season of bike racing live on Discovery Plus and Max, and that will include the conclusion of the World Championships over the course of this week.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, and we'll start with news that Nino Schurter has called time on his glittering career.
We don't often talk about mountain biking here on the GCN show, Connor, do we? But we're going to make an exception for Nino Schurter because he's an absolute legend. So he won an Olympic gold, 10 World Championship titles and 9 overall World Cups.
And 36 rounds of the World Cup as well. His last race was at the UCI Mountain Bike World Series in Lenzerheide, in his home country of Switzerland, at the weekend.
Congratulations on an incredible career. Next up, cyclists in the centre of London could soon be hit with tougher penalties for repeat offences for things like jumping red lights or nuisance cycling behaviour. Currently, the maximum penalty for most law-breaking on a bike is a £50 fixed penalty.
A paper presented to a government committee pushed for tougher fines to take on so-called bad behaviour. Cyclists have risen from 8,000 to 52,000 daily journeys between 1999 and 2024, with casualties per cyclist falling 45% as well since 2017, thanks to continued building of bike-friendly infrastructure. Personally, I think it's a bad move to focus on fining cyclists further. We want to encourage even more people to ride in cities. I think a lot of good work has been done, and I think this is potentially distracting from that.
One really good example of why cycling is so important in cities is this next study. It examined 480,000 participants in the UK and found that if you ride a bike rather than take a non-active mode of transport or daily journeys like a car, bus or train, you have a 19% lower risk of dementia and a 22% lower risk of getting Alzheimer's.
Physical activity has always been associated with a lower risk of dementia, and this again shows the importance of it. More than 55 million people worldwide have the disease, and this number is actually expected to triple by 2050.
Is it? Crikey. Yeah. Back to more racing-related news now, but it has consequences for the entire cycling industry in some way. Last week, SRAM launched a legal challenge against cycling's governing body, which is, of course, the UCI. What they claim is that the UCI's gear restriction trial is fundamentally unfair. This is in relation to the upcoming trial at the Tour of Huangshi later on this year, which is going to see riders effectively limited to a 54:11 gear ratio in a bid to tackle safety issues in racing arising from the increasing race speeds in recent years.
SRAM is calling for the prevention of the trial and any implementation of it in any future race. SRAM's current gearing ratios don't quite allow for 54:11.
It is awkward for them, isn't it?
Yeah.
The complaint was filed with the Belgian Competition Authority and will now be fully investigated. SRAM claims that the trial distorts the drivetrain market, violates EU competition law and disadvantages SRAM athletes at races.
It'll be interesting to see how this plays out, as it could have quite a large effect, really, on the bike industry overall, couldn't
it?
Yeah,
I don't think we've heard the last of that.
No.
Now, it appears that Strava might be set to go public in 2026. This is reported on Reuters, who said that recent activity points to it seeking an IPO over in the US. The platform has over 150 million active users across 185 countries, and it was valued at $2.2 billion earlier on this year in May after a funding round. I'd missed that at the time. That's a It's a big valuation.
It's a big valuation. It's unclear what this might mean for Strava. Public funding means that anyone can buy or sell shares in the company. Strava did draw some criticism when it made some of its features paid for only back in 2020. And it's hard to say if more accountability to shareholders would increase monetization on the platform or not. Recently, mapping platform Komoot also drew criticism after it was sold to a private equity firm, axing staff and paywalling new users after that sale. And those who are a fan of Strava will hope the heart of why they use it remains the same, I'm sure.
Indeed. Next up then, some tech news from our wheel partners Vision. So they launched their new SC4J i25 wheels late last week, part of their service course range of premium carbon wheel sets at competitive prices. I used them at that Gravel World Series in Girona on Saturday. They've got a 48mm aero profile and feature a 25mm internal hood channel, which is optimised for wider tyres. So perfect for gravel, obviously, but they are intended for road use as well. There'll be more information on them in the video that will come out from that race shortly. But for those desperate to hear the numbers, they come in at 1,590 grams for 48mm depth.
How'd they feel?
They felt really good. They felt faster in the first half of the race than they felt in the second half of the race, Connor, but that might have been because of my legs rather than because of those new wheels.
Speaking of wheels, a reminder that we've got two pairs of Elite Drive 50D2 wheel sets up for grabs in our latest giveaway. You have until this Friday at 10 a.m. BST to enter. There are a few restrictions on where you can enter from. All the details that you need can be found by clicking the link in the description below.
Right, we are going to finish Cycling Shorts this week with a couple of bits of news from Zwift. Firstly, don't forget you can join me on Tuesday at 9 a.m. BST and on Thursdays at 11 a.m. BST for some group workouts. They've been really great so far, I've been enjoying them. So over 100 of us have been training and suffering together. Also, if you end up slightly late for that session, don't worry, because we set it up so you can join the ride late. You just won't have as much of a warm-up.
And secondly, you may remember that we were asking you to take part in the ZRL under GCN teams a few weeks back. Those teams are now assembled, and each of us presenters have been assigned one.
And they've already started racing, actually, last week. Yeah, your team been getting on?
Yeah, good. I'm heading up the category D team. They finished 4th of 10 in their first race last week, which is very respectable.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah. What about yours?
I would say my team put in an equally good effort.
Yeah, okay. Where did they finish?
They came 5th, actually. So only one place worse than your team in 4th.
Okay, so I'm just kind of a little bit ahead of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many was that out of?
Well, it was out of 6 teams, 5th out of 6. But my team's Cat A, so they're obviously in a very, very competitive field.
Oh, yeah. So sounds like I've just got the better of you, Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I expect the teams that beat them have a better leader, you know.
Crikey. Yeah, thanks, Colin.
I'm taking this too far.
I expect that their team leaders all have 2 eyebrows as well. Maybe I'll be sacked after the second race, like some sort of overpaid Premier League manager.
If you're watching this, Dan's team, don't be afraid to oust him from the WhatsApp group if he is hindering you.
Oh, wouldn't that be brutal? Just no longer a part of the WhatsApp group. No,
focusing on his eyebrows more than the racing.
It's been interesting reading all their comments on the WhatsApp group, and I think they are going to do better next time around.
Yeah, okay. Good luck.
Next up, hack. / Bodge of the Week. Don't forget you can get involved in this part of the show by going to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader. The first one this week comes in from Burmy Rider, busted boa fix. The boa on my shoe broke, not the dial, but the sewn-in part that boa screws into. While dials have lifetime warranties, sewn-in parts only have a shoe warranty. These shoes are about 3 years old. Remove parts of the shoe, drill spigot out with 5mm drill, take a tap washer, remove rubber seal and file back down to about 1mm thick, drill 1.5mm hole in the end of the washer for dial screw to attach to, glue washer part into replaced spigot, use shoe repair glue and reattach sewn in part to shoe, and as per boa instructions, reattach dial. I hope you understood more of that than I did, Connor. I'm going to go on the pictures more than the words, I think.
That's what I started doing as well. It kind of makes sense. I mean, there's a few things in there I don't know what they are. I'm not a great plumber. I can get by, but I think from what that description tells me, they've done a good job of fixing it. And if you've fixed that, then fair play, that's a hack for me.
Well, that's the point. I don't think we need to understand the ins and outs of how it's done. If they had a broken boa dial and they fixed it, then it's a hack.
Yeah, that's definitely a hack. If you fix that and you're not feeling it on your foot, fair one. Next one's been sent in by Strindberg. This was found by their dad. This is a high security lock setup. And if you look closely, the lock isn't even contributing to the setup other than as a visual deterrent. I guess bike crime is not a big thing in our city.
For those of you that are listening to this in podcast format, this is a mountain bike that is locked up via its spoke with some string, essentially, isn't it? And I think we're going to say bodge that, are we?
That's a bodge.
I'm going to move on to the next one then, because it's along similar lines. This one came in from Pension Bikey. Having forgotten his bike lock, my mate decided that using cable ties that he managed to beg off someone would stop would-be thieves from stealing his bike whilst he had lunch with me at the restaurant. Fortunately, the bike was still there when we returned. I mean, that was more descriptive, but this would be an immediate bodge from Si because it involves zip tie. But yeah, he's just zip tied his bike to a post. Now, I was discussing this with Alex Payton earlier. I don't know if you've seen these things on Instagram and other social media, especially around London, it seems to be, where thieves are just going around with an angle grinder. Doesn't matter how good your lock is, they're doing it in broad daylight, don't seem to give a whatever you can say. And I sort of thought to myself, all you really need in a lock is something that prevents people from just taking the bike and riding off with it, just to deter the sort of easiness of it. But beyond that, they're just going to take it if they want it.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say the same thing. You just want to stop someone from immediately, opportunistically grabbing it and running. I mean, zip ties are pretty tough to get off. A string, you could just break, you just undo the knot.
Well, yeah, the string is just knotted up, yeah.
But zip ties are still pretty solid. You can get those zip tie locks, which are reusable, that's the thing, because you're going to use a lot of zip ties doing that every day, just for something very light and easy, but
I think we're still going to have to go bodge with that one, surely?
Yeah, I mean,
well, obviously I'll let you decide yourself, but I'm going bodge.
Yeah, I'm good putting a bodge.
Okay.
It's not something you'd do every day. This one's been sent in by Jeremy Lefite. A charging station. I often forget to charge one device for another before my ride, and also the cords and chargers everywhere were unsightly. I found some scrap wood in the garage, bought a plastic drawer organiser and a USB hub, put them together and everything has a spot and cord to charge it. No more forgetting a device and everything is in one place. I'm not a woodworker by any means, so please don't judge. Oh, I like this.
Payton loved this. He said he's been meaning to do something similar in his garage for some time, but hasn't got around to it yet.
I like this.
It's pleasing to look at that, isn't it? It looks, especially to me, it looks incredibly organised.
So organised. I mean, what drives me mad, because I've got a similar spot in my shed, but I've just done like a multi-port and I've got all the right leads going everywhere. But quickly, it gets disorganised.
Yeah.
So that's just like chaos theory. So to have something like that, that's the dream right there.
Yeah. This looks very similar to my sock and boxer short drawer, but I haven't got around to it with chargers for my bike just yet. Hack from us. This next one comes in from, have I cut somebody off? It just says V. Apologies if I didn't paste incorrectly the name, but it says, had an old set of rollers that I hadn't used for years. The elastic band had snapped and I couldn't even give them away. Just before I was about to throw them out, I had a brainwave. Turn them into a ladder storage holder. After about 30 minutes cutting and drilling, I came up with this. It's so much easier now to hang up and retrieve my ladders in the tight area that I have available. When I very first looked at this, Connor, I thought it had been made into like a loft ladder that you pull down, but I think it literally is, they're both put in place up there and the ladder fits in between. I'm saying hack, if it makes it easier and the storage looks quite nice, doesn't it?
Oh, that's a good idea. I think of something similar for my surfboards after watching that.
All very thought-provoking, these hacks and bodges, for what we could do if we ever got around to it ourselves.
Yeah, that's a hack. That was sent in by David Clement as well, so thanks for sending that one.
Okay, I don't know how I missed that. Thanks again for all your contributions. Always look forward to this part of the show. And don't forget, it's one of the parts that you can get involved in.
Right then, caption competition, your time to show when you get a chance to win the coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you've got to do is think of a witty caption for the photo this week and we'll judge the winner.
We will indeed. Last week's photo came from backstage, basically, of the podium of the Grand Prix Montreal, which was won by Tadej Pogacar. This is Quinn Simmons tucking into a post-race pizza. Our winner this week is Aero Noor, who put caption competition. Would you like a little more pizza? Let me mull it over.
That's good. I like that. That's tickled me. That's
two plays on words in one caption. Doesn't get much better than that, does it? Well done. This week's photo actually comes from a couple of weeks ago. This is Gianni Moscon. I can't remember what the race was. Might say here. No, it doesn't. But it was a couple of weeks ago. If you're listening to this, basically, there's a series of photos. We might put all of them up, actually, so you can see roughly what was happening to him. But he went a bit hot into a corner, from what I can tell, and looked very close to coming off. I don't know if he did come off, but this is the photo in the middle of that happening. I'll get you started. I really hope Red Bull gives you wings.
I like it. If you think you can do better, get involved in the comment section down below. I'm always looking forward to seeing what people come up with on these. It was brilliant.
Just before we let you know what's coming up on GCN this week, we've pulled out some comments from last week's videos, as we always do. Starting on the GCN show, which is about the weight obsession in pro cycling and whether it will ever go away. Mr. Dockers 5, but I suspect more people suffer from the effects of being overweight than those that are underweight.
Very true.
We want our D92 said we are all responsible adults and there will always be sports where the power to weight ratio is king. Cycling uphill, climbing, long distance running, ETC and peak performance in a sport doesn't mean peak health, and that's how it is.
That's a very good point, isn't it? I think we often look at the top athletes and just assume you're going to be of peak health as well as peak physical condition, but it does push you too hard, really, doesn't it?
That's a very good point.
On a different subject that we talked about on the show last week, the tube strikes and therefore so many cyclists around London. Martin Feeney, 1962, put, my fiancée and I were visiting London during the tube strike. During the evening rush hour at one traffic intersection, the road looked like the start grid of a cyclocross race. There were three rows of eight cyclists waiting for the light to turn green. When the light did go green, it was cyclocross mayhem.
I did see this happen in London. I thought we should have gone and
just experienced it.
There were so many cyclists. I saw some clips. It was incredible. Just proves a bike the best way to get about a city, in my book. Under the pill that makes you 15% faster, this was all on placebos.
Yeah.
It was really interesting, actually. Ollie was talking me through this in the process of it all going on. It's really interesting to hear about the different reactions people
do. You know what he's told me subsequent to that video? Well, actually, I think it was just before it came out. He said, a placebo works even if you know it's a placebo.
I'd read that as well.
Which seems bizarre.
Yeah,
how is that possible?
I think it's, yeah, I know, I don't know, but it is a thing. It is a thing.
How weird. Anyway, Matt Joyner put, what I learned is that I need to start going around at the next group ride and telling everyone they look terrible and don't get enough sleep. Let the nagging begin. It's science. Nocebo.
Dominic Britt, Ollie has performed an unexpected public service of demonstrating how wellness products are marketed and sold.
I see, yeah. No. Very good point. Evan Shaw put, I'm a forensic psychologist and research analyst. Analyst, should I say. 40 years ago, we did an experiment with college freshmen where we gave one group five drinks of alcoholic beer and another five drinks with no alcohol. We told both of them that they had alcohol. Both groups felt the same degree of feeling inebriated. When told what had happened, the group with fake alcohol said baloney. They were genuinely drunk.
Yeah, it's incredible. I've read on stories that I feel a little bit tipsy when I have a 0%. I think I'd be like greatly affected by placebo. Just that one beer feeling, it's lovely.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy a 0% beer, but I wouldn't say I ever feel at all drunk at the end of it.
Yeah, I just feel
or even slightly.
I feel nicely relaxed.
Yeah,
but then I'm like, well, I haven't actually had alcohol here. It's really weird.
Mm. Finally, underneath racing on a budget bike with upgrades that Alex Payton did last week, Chris UX5C, but my problem is that I've got entry-level legs.
Mayal Man said, Sai is the most consistent GCN presenter. The man has maintained proper Cat 2 form for the last 15 years.
He might be a little insulted at that because he was still pro 13 years ago, wasn't he, in 2012. NerdX Project, I think the video is super cool, but I'd honestly love a follow-up video on the same style where the bike is kept 100% stock with no compromise. There were a lot of comments along those lines, so we might have to get Alex to do the group ride when it resumes again next year on the stock bike and see how he got on there. I lied, actually. We've got a few more comments underneath which training plans actually work, which is your one, Connor.
Robert Wooten, JR9... LY said, the most important thing you can do for long-term success in any endurance sport is to make sure you're having fun. I definitely agree with that.
It's a lot easier if you're having fun, isn't it? And Angeloa? I think a more interesting question would be, what type of training is best in your 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s and 80s? So there's some homework for you to do, Connor. Yeah, and Simon Roebuck put, a trend I didn't see coming, those sandals.
I'm getting some grief for my sandals all around.
And yet you keep wearing them.
Yeah, Very practical shoe. Although it got too cold today and I've succumbed to trainers.
Have you finally? That's it for the winter now, is it? Yeah. Bring them back out this time next year and hope they are in fashion.
Yeah. Who knows?
Right then, what's coming up on the channel this week? Only a couple of videos to tell you about, actually, and both of them are from Connor, so I'm going to let him explain. On Thursday, how to improve your fitness from home.
Yep, just a few tips to help you, hopefully, during the winter months, kind of get going on the bike, even if it is from home, from your living room, wherever you ride.
You can
indoors.
Do a lot from home, can't you?
You can, yeah.
And then on Saturday, this is a really big video that's been a long time in the making, a long time in the edit, because it was an epic ride that Connor did on the Pamir Highway. So without giving the game away too much.
Yeah, so this is kind of like one of the most legendary roads in the world, crossing through Central Asia. We went from Kyrgyzstan to Tajikistan, some of the highest ground I've ever covered by bike. It really is just a truly kind of epic route and journey you can take on by bike, with a lot of challenges thrown into the mix, many of which we weren't expecting. So I took it on with GCN En Francais presenter Maxime Prieur.
He's like an ultra distance legend, isn't he?
Yeah, he was absolutely brilliant. Great company. I felt I let him down a little bit. I won't give too much away. But yeah, really proud of this film, actually. Really proud of it. And I hope you enjoy it at home. Let us know what you think.
I can't wait to watch it. It's about an hour long. So set some time aside one evening. Get it up on your big screen TV, because I know it's going to be epic and well worth the watch.
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun to ride. It was absolutely brutal at the time, but watching it back myself, it was a real blast.
And that's the only video we're going to put out this weekend, because it is such a long one, so Connor's feeling the pressure right now.
I am.
It's all on him this week. Thanks very much for watching, everyone. Let us know your thoughts in the comments below, and we'll see you next week.